This is Shari Veris, Chair of the Family, Community, and Preventive Medicine Department at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, Phoenix. This is our September department updates and asynchronous all-department meeting. This is a part of our ongoing effort to not only keep our local employed faculty updated and engaged, but to also reach our valuable broad base of faculty across the state. Please provide feedback, updates, or ideas you may have in the feedback survey, and we can get it into our future audio or newsletter updates. I'm also using Riverside FM software with AI assistance. We are all learning and trying to level up on these emerging technologies, so just bear with us. Also, backed by popular demand, I'm incorporating AI Shari voice again. It is a combo of voices recorded under Shari. That voice is a little lighter and younger at the moment. Sweet.
Okay, I love being a compilation of voices for this department. Our department doesn't get the headlines for cutting edge technology, using lasers to create brain transplant. No, we are across the state specializing in the needs of the communities we serve, innovating around solutions for our communities, enhancing education, creating greater value in health services, improving communication, and incorporating technologies to create better outcomes for our efforts. For those who listen, I hope this resonates and gives you a snapshot on how the faculty and department are supporting these efforts.
We have Katie Bright with some updates.
The Office of Community Engagement has some pretty exciting updates. We are at our new LIC student selection phase and have some stellar candidates who will begin their longitudinal integrated clerkship experiences immersed in tribal and rural communities across the state. We also are really excited that starting next week, we'll be opening our first ever application for a three-year MD curriculum focused on primary care accelerated pathway. We'll be selecting up to 10 students to participate in this program and pipeline into our Arizona residencies in family medicine, general pediatrics, and general internal medicine to help chip away at our primary care physician workforce shortage. It was really exciting to come together during an Arizona Physician Workforce Summit just last week, where 90 people from all over the state, including all of the medical education institutions, medical schools, several of our GME programs from both Phoenix and beyond, rural, urban, came together to talk about our shared challenges with the primary care physician workforce. Topics at the summit included everything from what's going well and what progress have we made since our last primary care physician workforce summit, this is GME expansion, and lots of collaborative progress, the AHEC sponsoring institution, and ongoing collaboration and discussion. But we also focus on what's still not going well, such as funding, state advocacy and support, preceptor burnout, preceptor availability, clinical capacity, residency slot shortages, and then gaps in data. So it was really cool to just come together to determine, like, what data do we need? How can we come together to gather this data and collaborate? And how we can really demonstrate to those who can really help us make changes, like at the legislative level, the return on investment for medical education, because it's pretty huge and it's a big win for Arizona in the long run. So really cool summit, lots of exciting stuff as we continue to chip away at this primary care physician shortage that we face.
Next up, we have Leah Hillier.
Hi, this is Leah Hillier. I wear a number of hats at the medical school. And so I'll give a couple of updates based on those hats. The first role that I play is as the director of service learning. And in that role, I oversee the Certificate of Distinction in what's called Service of Communities. We now have three focus areas under the umbrella of Service of Community. We have a focus area in advocacy. We have a population focus area. So students can choose a particular population that has typically worse than average health outcomes. And then we also have a focus area in health promotion. So students can choose one of those foci, or they also can do just a general COD and participate in all of the content that we have. The second hat that I wear is as the outgoing chair of the Primary Care Residency Innovation Collaborative, Learning, Peer Education, and Research in Arizona. And that's what we call Prickly Pear. So we had our second in-person meeting on September 15th, 2025 at the Bear Down Conference Center. And we were delighted that day to introduce our two new chairs of the collaborative, Dr. Marima Buchai, who's the chair of family medicine over at Creighton University, and Dr. Ed Paul, who was previously the program director up in Flagstaff and is now working with the Arizona AHEC. So we had lots of wonderful updates on projects that we're working on collaboratively across programs in the state. We had a wonderful opportunity as well to just network and spend time collaboratively solving problems. And certainly there's a lot of focus on working together on collaborative recruitment to the specialty of family medicine in Arizona.
And now an update from our GME programs.
Okay, first up is Steve Brown from the Banner University Phoenix Residency Program.
Hey, this is Steve Brown at the Phoenix Family Medicine Residency. And I wanted to just chat a little bit about a big change in family medicine education that our program is adapting to, like other programs, which is competency-based medical education. When our residents graduate, we're required to certify as program directors that they are competent in certain areas. We've now done this for 2 years, and they're ramping them up so that we will be clicking on, I can't remember now, 15 to 20 things. So things that are going into effect starting June 2026 include musculoskeletal health, preventive care, undifferentiated symptoms, and participating in teams. So we need to make sure that our programs, including our program, are robust in those areas. And another big change is that we're going to have to certify that our residents are competent in certain procedures. The idea from the board is that when you see a family doctor, you know that family doctors can all do these things. And so examples of procedures that are required: skin biopsies, joint injections, toenail removals, IUDs, and other long-acting contraception, interpretation of basic x-rays. So our program, like other programs, need to make sure that our residents are having this experience, but also that they're competent in the procedures that they need for us to be able to say that they can be board-certified family physicians. So this is an update from our program, but also an update from other programs nationwide. Thank you.
Next up, I have Dr. Jake Anderson with the Banner Desert Residency Program Update.
Hi, this is Jake Anderson, Program Director for the University of Arizona College of Medicine Phoenix Banner Desert Family Medicine Residency Program. Thanks for the opportunity to provide this update. I'm excited to share that we're now nearly 4 months into having our first group of 6 incredible interns as a part of our program as we expand into the East Valley. Things have been going really well. We're excited that we finally have our full core faculty complement after recently welcoming Dr. Jeffrey Sadek, who's a FMOB, and just prior to that, welcoming Dr. Haley Hochstein and Dr. Sierra Voy, who were just finishing their residency at the University of Arizona College of Medicine Phoenix Downtown Program as chief residents this past year. We're excited about the curriculum and the GME presence that we're developing with Banner Desert Medical Center and our Chandler community, and have had really great opportunities to partner with our community, including through a pediatric free clinic that Banner sponsors that our program now staffs every Friday. We're looking forward to kicking off recruiting and have started reviewing applications, and we'll start interviews in about a month's time to look for our next exciting group to join this incredible team we have here. Thanks.
Dr. Roberta Matern up in Payson.
Hi, everyone. This is Bertie, and I'll share some important updates from the Payson residency program. First, we're really pleased that Marisa Spires joined us on the 2nd of September. We're excited to have her energy infused into our program and expertise. She's already delving into teaching our didactics up here. We also, as Jake and Steve know, started delving into the ERAS applications yesterday, and already we've seen some promising applicants who really align with our rural mission and vision. At the end of October, October 30th, actually, we will be getting our first continuing accreditation site visit from the ACGME. So we're working hard at making sure all our ducks are in a row and getting ready to showcase our program. But we're having some growing pains. One area is how to best meet the integrated behavioral health requirement in our clinic. And so we've been exploring solutions with BMG to see how that might happen. And we're hoping to get Gina Touch on board with us to help with some of the behavioral health teaching. We want to acknowledge that we also have some real interest from second year medical students in regards to the longitudinal integrated curriculum and the new 3-year primary care track. Some of our ERAS applications are also very interesting from kids that are from rural eastern Arizona. Then we're starting to host some sub-interns with our first student starting October 20th. She's from Midwestern and is very interested in full spectrum family medicine with OB. So that's an exciting opportunity too. And then we hope to launch our very first patient advisory council meeting in a few short weeks so we can tick that box off for our site visitor. And finally, we're getting our point of care ultrasound curriculum off the ground. There's some e-scans waiting to be delivered to us from the med school, and we have a SonoSim platform coming to help us get our POCUS skills up to snuff. So great to chat. We'll see y'all later.
Okay, I have Keisha Pierre-Lise here. She is our founding maternal child health fellow. Keisha, how is it going in your fellowship?
Hey, Dr. Veras. It's going actually really, really well. I'm definitely grateful to be here, coming from Brooklyn, New York, and moving all the way to Phoenix, Arizona. I know that's where I wanted to like plant my foundation in family medicine. So I am very grateful to be here. And when looking for opportunities here to continue with my foundation in family medicine, I did see this opportunity for the maternal child health fellowship, which aligned with everything I wanted to do within my career. And so I'm grateful to you and Dr. Matern for giving me the opportunity in order to be one of the founding members of the fellowship here. And it's been going well from the first time having that relationship with Banner University and now expanding our depths into Banner Desert, Banner Ocotillo, Banner Casa Grande. It's been very nice getting all the opportunities with spontaneous vaginal deliveries, assisted vaginal deliveries, C-sections.
Wonderful. Let's see. You told me the other day that you've had over 50 C-sections so far. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's great. I think at this point, I think I'm up to about 56 or 57 C-sections as of this morning. It's something that's been expanding, especially now that we have so many other locations that we are able to do the C-sections and have privileges. The C-sections have grown and the learning opportunities have been great. That collaboration with all of the providers have been essential in growing our program.
Super. How's it going with the babies?
Well, of course, the babies are the cutest part of our jobs. Absolutely. Part of our care is the child part of the maternal child health fellowship. So today I was in NICU. Part of it is learning the NRP as part of our program in order for us to understand and be that provider in case you are the only provider. So we go over different pathologies, especially respiratory pathologies such as TTN, MAS, pulmonary hypertension, in order to get babies back to well so they can go home with their mamas. So again, another great opportunity with the NICU team here. We've had such great collaboration.
That's great. What is your favorite thing about all this?
Oh my gosh. I think that my most favorite thing is part of what I wanted to do moving forward with my career, which aligned a lot with what we're doing here, is making sure that there's more people who want to do the full spectrum of family medicine. And I especially love the obstetric part in family medicine. So having that experience to teach the residents, teach the medical students, and making sure that they are getting that experience so they can go out into the field and feel comfortable in doing it by themselves. So it's been really rewarding, not only growing my niche, but also having people also fall in love with it. And even if they may not want to do the obstetrics part in their practice, they are at least comfortable in providing the care that they need until delivery. So it's been really, really nice knowing that we have all of the collaboration with all of the providers and having people get really excited about this program and wanting to join. So I love it.
Anything else that you wanted to add before we go?
I think that I want to add that, especially being in the heart of Phoenix, it's it's such a interesting situation where, you know, you can feel there. Sometimes people will think that, oh, we're saturated with a lot of OBs here. Like, why would you want to do OB care here? But I think it, like I said, with this program, kind of collaborating with everything I want to do within my practice, has everything I want, which is teaching, which is doing that obstetric care, collaborating with other providers who are definitely willing to teach you and help you with whatever your heart desires within the family medicine, OB, maternal, childcare aspects.
I'm here with Dr. Jason Lubner, and he's going to talk about some of the value-based care, quality improvement, and integration of AI and family medicine, and why that is so important to what we do.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Shari. We're getting towards the end of 2025 here, and the value-based care conversations always come up and get a little more priority for where we sit within Banner, for sure. As our partners on the collaborative side or on the value-based side are looking to maximize things towards the end of the year. And, you know, one of the things I've noticed is our group is really just improving year over year. And it's always hard for me to, you know, because I always think about where we can go and the opportunities. But, you know, when we sit back and look, and you and I just got off a meeting where showing that pretty much improvement in most areas from where we were last year when we're looking at whether it's cancer screening rates, diabetic control, some improvements in inpatient admissions, annual wellness visit. We're doing more of those than we ever had. And I just think it speaks to the evolution that we've seen over the past few years, because it's not just a year-over-year improvement. It's a multi-year journey that we've seen, just steady, consistent improvement in those areas. And I think it's, you know, in that area, it's our chance to shine in primary care. You know, it's an area where the payers and groups like that are increasingly having focus. They look for a coordinated experience for our patients. And you know, the historical system with fragmented care just isn't achieving it. And it's when we as a primary care group can organize the care for the patient and not just think in sense of just a single encounter, but like have processes and teams in place to engage them, our patients, and get them in for these visits, have ways to close recommended care gaps that we all care about, like cancer screening and getting their diabetes under control, that we help address some of the challenges that our patients are experiencing in just navigating the healthcare system and navigating their lives. It's really, for me, a huge opportunity for us to shine within primary care. And increasingly, that's being recognized with, you know, from a financial perspective. And we have a really robust team here, having population health and nurse navigators and integrated pharmacists, integrated social workers. It's really a luxury, but it's all this value-based care work that really helps us create the use case for that.
That's great. As an academic department, what's your dream or vision for how what we do here in the, you know, kind of the residency and in the academic department, family medicine clinics? How are you hoping that will impact the rest of the specialty in the state?
I think we have a huge opportunity, first and foremost, just with being an academic clinic. I think, you know, 10 years ago when we would talk about this, a lot of times we like left the residents out. This would, you know, we kept it at an attending level conversation. And we talked about all this work being outside of it. And particularly in the past couple of years, right, we're increasingly involving the residents in this. And in my experience, they've been really receptive to doing this. We talked to them in the very first month about health maintenance and closing care gaps. And we've got them increasingly involved with InKnow. Is it where we need to be? Probably not. But I think when we think about training highly functional provider physicians or other providers for the current healthcare system and where it's going, training them in these skills is crucial. This is something that they are going to be walking into in most situations. Even if it's not exactly the same, there are models very similar like this in the FQHC where they're accountable for various types of metrics in these areas. Or if they're going into private practice, there's private, you know, I know that's a majority, but there are private practice providers who get more of their income from doing value-based care work than they do from traditional fee-for-service, because they just know how to do well in these systems, do the documentation they need to. And I think that's like probably the biggest thing. And so I hear it increasingly, and maybe it's because of the role that I played in a lot of education in this, is just some of our graduates coming back saying they are the most prepared for doing some of this work, and we're only getting better at it. And so that's, I think, really exciting in how we really contribute as an academic department in helping to spread this knowledge and this skill set, because it is a skill set. And then I'm really excited for where we kind of continue to evolve as we think of more and more care, team-based care. And when we think about those complex patients who, you know, the ones that are always going into the emergency room and the hospitals and often are getting a lot of care that doesn't align with their values. Like, I think that's our next level of evolution, is how do we get good at that as a department? How do we help incorporate our trainees? And, you know, increasingly we work with residents, but this can be incorporated to a smaller extent with some of our medical students so that they're understanding this increasingly at an early stage. And I do think they're receptive to this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's like such a brighter future for family medicine, actually getting in there and trying to think about what do people actually need and how do we make their care better. Shifting gears, I know you've been helping with the AI, integrating that into the clinic and kind of thinking and dreaming about what areas we could also potentially target for AI intervention. What are your thoughts on that?
So I think, you know, there's tons of different opportunities for us. And it's really exciting. And at the same time, always a little bit frustrating for me that, you know, we're dependent on some other folks and other teams to make some of those changes. But, you know, I think a lot of us have started to see the benefits of this tool with just a basic functionality of writing our notes. I know I personally feel like this has got to be one of the biggest helpful innovations that we've had in our career to help the, you know, not just the work-life balance, but like get us back to why a lot of us went into medicine, is so we can actually focus on the patients more, pay less attention to the EMR. And I know for me, a lot of times, as long as I see that orange little light saying it's recording going, I'm like, I'm only looking at the EMR if I'm getting a piece of information that I really need, but otherwise I can focus more on patients. And it helps to move us back in the direction. We've had a lot of creep of, we need you to do this, we need you to do that. This is starting to move it in the other direction. And I think it's just the start. You know, I think where this will go, and for us within Banner, it's going to be a little dependent on some of the stuff that's going on with Oracle and Cerner, but their roadmap has all sorts of exciting things that is they're going to be rolling out over the next couple of years. Things like, you know, basically saying, you know, show me the patient's heart failure history, and leveraging sort of, you know, template-based information of like what goes into good heart failure management, as well as like searching the EMR and pulling all that data out so that you can just say, hey, Cerner, show me this, basically. And a lot of that information comes and you're not searching around the chart. I think there's a lot of stuff around incorporating patient responses and task automation that will come around related to like patient messages and lab results that will continue to reduce the workload. And then I think there's, you know, an additional feature that we'll see how they evolve and at what time frame, but starting to look into like clinical decision to support, to almost in a predictive way, you know, take a look at how you're interacting with the patient, what that conversation it looks like with that patient, that it's recording, compare it to, you know, clinical guidelines and say, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that as part of that process? So sort of a helpful assistant that's by our side. So I think that one's a little further out, some of the more easy task navigation or automation, I should say, and chart searching abilities will be some of the stuff we see first. So I think those are a couple exciting things. And I know, you know, we played around with AI a little bit with Luminetics as well for our diabetic retinopathy screening. I think that's another example of a chance to really align patient care goals with some of the things we're trying to achieve, because this is a tool now where a patient no longer has to go to the ophthalmologist. They're getting their care in one place for a number of those patients. So we have some workflow things to work through as far as making it as efficient as possible, helping our team members get comfortable with it, particularly our staff. That's just another example of, I think it aligns with what we want as primary care physicians, is a nice, clean, coordinated, comprehensive primary care experience. And that goes right back to the value-based care goals of typically patients that get that sort of experience achieve a lot of their value-based care goals, where they're talking about total cost of care or closing individual metrics.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have
Take
a
care.
Great one.
All right. Bye-bye. Shifting gears, an interview with Abhinav, one of our faculty.
at the Longitudinal Integrated Clerkship site in San Luis, Arizona. Border towns in Arizona are special healthcare places with distinct community health needs. Okay, I'm here with Abhinav, who is in San Luis and is teaching our University of Arizona Longitudinal Integrated Clerkship students and also family medicine residents in their first year. How does your day go? And tell us how it's going down in San Luis.
My day is actually going pretty well. So this morning I was in continuity clinic, precepting residents all morning. And then afternoon, it's my admin time. So I was actually working with the residents and giving them topics regarding implicit bias so they can work on that one through AAFPs, one of the curriculums. It's been a pleasure working with a few of the LIC students that we have. We have two. Currently, one was Marvin and the other one is Frankie. Did those lectures, and I know I've spoken to them personally on how their experience has been. And Marvin loved his experience with Dr. Bott. And Frankie had a great time with Dr. Stevens, and she did a lot, and she had a chance of doing a lot of procedures with him as well. So overall, they have expressed a positivity for their rotations and the time that they're having. Frankie especially expressed her interest in integration of behavioral health that we have in our clinic. So it's all exciting, and it's actually great to be working with both the LIC students as well as our residents.
Wonderful. One of the unique things with LIC and with your site is you have all these different specialties and different people providing different aspects of healthcare.
Yes. So we have internal medicine providing primary care here as well. Dr. Bott, as I mentioned, he's the LIC director here, and he's the one who's actually an internist. But he has been practicing primary care for 10 years in this area, and he's been with the organization for 10 years. And students love rotating with him because he values education a lot. So he takes his time with his patients. His patients love him, and he spends time teaching the Stevens. He's our OBGYN who works with Dr. Richards as well. And then students also go with Dr. Richards to the hospital for doing deliveries as well when they're on their inpatient rotation. Dr. Stevens is going to be our medical director for the birthing center.
Is that open?
I think it opens in February. It's going to be a great opportunity because, as you know, in family medicine, it gets really difficult to meet those OB numbers since we have such a strong OB department here as well as pediatrics department. We're really excited to have our own birthing center. We recently just started our first class, actually. This is our inaugural class. We're a brand new program. We're still trying to build on it. And right now, since the application is just open, the good news is we have some applicants from local community, actually. We have some applicants from University of Arizona. So definitely looking forward to how this year's match is going to play out. So that's what's happening on our residency side. In terms of LIC, I think it's a great way to incorporate our medical students into rural residency tracks and giving them exposure to how border care medicine is or how medicine is in underserved areas in the rural areas as well. Our town is unique because it provides this whole cultural based care as well, and a lot of cross-border care because people here have easy access to care in Mexico, and it's for a lot of them it's because insurance gets expensive and the medications might not be covered. So it provides them that buffer where they can actually go seek care on the other side as well and then come back to us for further care. It makes it a really unique environment. So the experience that the LIC kids get from here is impeccable, in my opinion. And I think this is a great pipeline track to solve the issues that we're facing in terms of family medicine, primary care, physician recruitment, and trying to increase the workforce in these rural areas, which is highly needed. The whole LIC program is amazing, and I really appreciate you guys for starting that and considering us as one of the rotating site and giving us the privilege to actually teach our medical students and actually expose them to what our community needs are. Right now, my residents are on community medicine block, and I'm in charge of that community medicine block. We're going to get them incorporated with the public health department. This will expose them to what the problems are and start thinking about some of the quality improvement projects that they will be working on. As one of the aspects of this rotation also is to introduce them to the community medicine research, gaining them that exposure and having them do some of the community assessments to see how they can come up with some topics for the research projects as well, and how some of the things that we can do to implement some change in our community.
Yeah, that's great. That's where I think you and I always have this alignment where
We really just want to get these medical students and residents out to all different parts of the state and get them in a position where they're thinkers and problem solvers and leaders of health of communities.
Amit, when you're coming in as a medical provider with that attitude of actually learning and making that change and coming in as an educator, especially for a residency program, to start a pipeline, to start supplying this community with good primary care physicians, I think this area is untapped and the potential to expand out is amazing.
Thank you. Any other parting thoughts?
Oh, no, actually, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity again to talk to you with about my community and how my time is going out here in San Luis, and appreciate your guidance every single time.
Thank you for listening. Our department quarterly update will be coming out soon. We have some great ongoing work. The future is bright.
And our next audio update comes out in December. We'll see you then.